On page 692, we're in the middle of the story, where I'm Pasuk Yud Gimel. The story that happened was a Ben Ishi Yisraelis, who was the son of a Jewish mother, an Egyptian man, and like the Pasuk says, his mother's name was Shloimis Bas Divri, the Matidon, and she was the one that the Mitzri, the Moshe Rabbeinu, killed, because he lived with her. And he came to Beis Din, and the court ruling was against him. What happened? Because his mother came from the tribe of Dan, so he wanted a share in the tribe of Dan. But the Beis Din ruled that he can't give him from the tribe of Dan because it only goes by the father. Here his father wasn't Jewish, so he can't be in Dan. So he lost the court case in Moshe Rabbeinu's Beis Din. So what happened, God forbid, he cursed Hashem, and they brought him... Don't tell me it's hot in here. You're wearing a coat and it's hot? No. Sit down, you'll be warm. So they didn't know what to do, so they put him into prison. Okay? Now the Mefarshim explain that there's a difference between this case and another guy called Mekesha Sheitzim. There's another guy in Chumash that chopped wood on Shabbos. And they also didn't know what to do with him until Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem what to do with him to stone him. Okay? So Rashi explains, over there they knew that it was the death sentence. Because they knew desecrating Shabbos is the death sentence. They didn't know what death to give him. Should be burning or stoning or choking. They didn't know what type of things to do for him. Here, they didn't know if they can give him death or not. Here they didn't know if they can kill him, or if they should kill him or not. And Rashi says, interestingly, that, it's really look in the wrong place. Here they didn't know if death would be good enough for him. And as the Daskin Balatesa says like this, that the sin of cursing God was so bad, they didn't think death would atone for it. Which means as follows. In Yiddishkeit, death or punishment, lashes, whatever the punishment is not a punishment for the sake of punishment. It's to clean and to cleanse the neshama. The person sinned, they became impure. In order to clean the person, the punishment cleans the person. If he doesn't get punished, he goes to Gehenna to get cleaned. Okay? But basically, punishment in Torah is a cleansing process. Suffering in Yiddishkeit is a cleansing process. It's all part of a process of cleansing. So therefore, they thought that this sin is so bad and so strict that even death wouldn't be good enough for him. So they locked him up to know what to do. And last time we explained that in Yiddishkeit, there is no punishment of court, of jail. Remember we discussed it at the end of was a few weeks ago. There is no punishment in Yiddishkeit of jail, because jail is basically a waste of time. You either get killed, in other words, and that's it, because you did an aveda that you don't have a purpose of life anymore, so Hashem says you need to get killed. Or punishment, you give the guy lashes, you say, okay, now you're cleansed, go and lead a good life. To put a guy into jail is to completely worthless, basically. He's not doing anything. So that is against Torah. Okay? So here, they put him into prison, not as a punishment. They pashut needed to wait to find out what the halach is, what Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, what should the punishment be. That's what we're up to now. So, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe Lema 692. Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe Lema, Hashem spoke to Moshe. Heitze yisem mekalel amichutz lamachane. Take this person out, the one that cursed, outside the camp. V'samchu chol Hashemim es yedeyem areshei. And all the listeners, all the people that hear, have to put their hands on his head. V'dogmo eisei kol ha'edo, and the whole community kills him, stones him. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody stones them. It means Beis Din does it, okay? And Beis Din represents the community, so it's like the community actually killed the person, okay? Now, stoning really is...
So the Beis
Din... What?
The Beis Din, whoever was in the Beis Din, they threw the stones actually...
They didn't actually throw stones at him. Skila, the Gemara says, there was a platform two stories high, and they pushed him off it. If he died, he died, and then they put a stone on his head. That was the stoning punishment. If that didn't kill him, then they threw stones at him until he died. Okay? Now, there's four capital punishments in Torah. Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, and Chenek. Stoning, burning. Hereg is killing with a sword, and Chenek is choking. Now, what was the process of the sins? Sreifa wasn't that they put the guy in a fire. You know, like Avraham Avinu was thrown into the fire. That's not what Sreifa is. The Mishnah says, and the Gemara says, that Sreifa was, they gave him hot lead, very hot lead to drink, and he drank it and died instantly. Hereg, is they beheaded them like they used to do in the olden time, you know, chop off the head. Chenek is, they put the guy into earth, like Zevel, and then they put a rope around his neck, and two guys pulled. And that killed him. There's a very interesting thing, there's a machlokes in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, between, I think, sort of Shimon and Chachamim. What is the worst of the punishments? Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, Chenek, which is the worst of the punishments? What's the difference? What's the difference? Because the din is, if a guy committed two sins, let's say one gets skila and one gets sreifa, you can't kill him twice. So which one do you give him? So the halacha is, you give him the stricter one, the worst one. So the machlekes in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, what is the worst? One opinion says skila is the worst, and the other opinion says sreifa is the worst. But whatever it is, but that was the process of, but here it says they had to take him out, outside of the camp, okay? They put their hands on his head, okay? Now, why did they put their hands on their head? This is the only punishment, by the way, that you have to put your hands on their head, on the guy's head. Somebody desecrates Shabbos, you stone him, but you don't put your hands on his head. This, you put so two things. Rashi says, to show that the head, because the mouth spoke, was responsible for this punishment. But Mephoshim say like this. In fact, the Rambam elaborates, and really the Gemara explains like this. And it was a big problem. Because when witnesses testify that somebody committed a crime, they have to come to Beis Din and testify what the guy did. Right? Now, they can't come to Beis Din and say the guy cursed Hashem. They have to say exactly what the guy said. Huh? So then, in fact, it says, if I'm not mistaken, that I'm right, that the witnesses have to say it. Because you can't say he cursed God, because you have to be explicit. When witnesses testify in Beis Din, you need to be explicit, what did the guy exactly say? Right? They had to know. So they couldn't say Stam, he cursed Chas V'Shalom Hashem, because that's not testimony. So they had to say over exactly what the guy said. So therefore the Rambam says, and the Gemara says, the Beis Din would have to tear Kriya, because they heard Hashem, and the witnesses would have to tear Kriya, and all that. They would have to tear their garments. But it says like this, because this guy is forcing the witnesses to say it, now they're not liable. You can't say they're cursing God because they're repeating what the guy said. So this is what it says. Therefore, to absolve them of what they were required to repeat, the witnesses put their hands on the guy's head as if to say, this that we have to repeat, this terrible thing that you said, is because of you, it's not us. Because that's what they're basically, that the sin is yours, not ours. Because they had to actually say it again. What?
Is that similar to like the cow that they had to chop its head from the back, you know, when somebody was found murdered?
Yeah, the Eglah Rufa.
They had to put their hands on the head of the animal.
Yeah, that's over there. They also put their head. But here, this is the only case with witnesses that they actually put their hands. Now, obviously, if a guy, two witnesses say a guy killed him, they don't have to do an act of killing to show what he did. I mean, obviously, that not. But here they have to say exactly what the guy said, and therefore they have to. Now, again, it says, call her Edom. Who did it? The witnesses really were the ones that did it. Like it says in another pasuk, Yad Ha'ed, letter on in Dvarim. Yad Ha'edim, Tia Bei Rishayna Lahamisei. The hand of the witnesses have to be the first ones to kill him, because they were the ones that saw it. So they have to kill him. But Rashi says from the Medrash, interesting thing, that at the end of Chumash, Hashem said, Parshas Hazinu, listen, heaven and earth, you know, into what I'm telling you. So Rashi says in the Medrash that Hashem actually made the heaven and earth witnesses. Because Hashem says, who am I going to make witnesses that the Jews should keep the Torah? People die. So how am I going to make witnesses that are alive? So Hashem says, Hazina Shemayim v'adabeir v'sishmar desim refi, heaven and earth, they're existing forever, they're going to be the witnesses. And the Medrash says, that's why, what happens when the Jews sin, the witnesses kill first, right? The witnesses give the punishment. What do the heaven and earth do? Shemayim l'yia matar, v'aretz l'siten yasivula. Earth doesn't produce and heavens don't produce. They're the witnesses that Hashem gave to the Jews that they're going to have to keep Torah mitzvahs. So because they're the witnesses, so therefore they're the first ones to punish.
Somebody pushing him?
They push him down. They didn't push him down.
But that's for this sin specifically?
This is putting the hand on the head, that's only for the sin. And again, that's because they have to repeat what the guy said.
No, but one thing is when you say that the witness have to...
No, every sin.
That's every
sin.
So it's not just the based in and stoning, it's also...
No, the witnesses do it.
Okay.
If the witnesses don't want to do it.
If the witnesses don't want to do it, they have no choice. They got to do it. If what happens, Benson says, I don't want to punish the guy. They have to. If they don't, they get a sin.
But he doesn't want to go Chas v'Shalom and say repeat what the guy says.
They have to. They have no choice. Beis Din forces them to repeat whatever the guy says.
Write it down?
Huh? No, you can't write it. Only nowadays, in monetary issues, can you do it. Because the Gemara learns it out from a pasuk, Al pi shnayim edim, Shleisha Edim Yokum Dovar. The Gemara says, and the mouth, Alpi, the mouth, Shnayim Edim, two witnesses, or three Edim, the thing exists. The Gemara learned, it says, Alpi, mi pihem, velo mi piksavim. It has to be from the mouth, not from their writing. If witnesses write their testimony, it's no good. This that witnesses today sign documents, ksuba, God forbid a get, a loan document, yeah? That's all midrabanan. Min ha-Torah, in fact, it goes even more. When you say mi pi em v'lei mi pi ksavim, you have to hear it from the horse's mouth. You're not allowed to hear it through an interpreter. That's why the din was that a few members of the big Bezdin had to know all 70 languages. Because what happens if a witness comes and he doesn't speak Hebrew? He only speaks Farsi. He's going to come to Beis Din, and Beis Din is going to look at him like, what in the world are you talking about? So if you have a translator, in the court system today, you have court translator, official translators. In the Beis Din, not monetary, monetary is all rabbinic anyway, a lot of this stuff. But in capital punishment, types of punishments and all that, there was no interpreter in Beis Din. Beis Din had to, because why? Al pi shnayim edim, mi pi em v'lei mi piksavim. It has to be from their mouth, al pi shnayim edim, and not through an interpreter. In fact, the Torah is very strict. In fact, lately in Rambam, those that learn Rambam, the Rambam discusses the halacha about if a Rebbe comes over to his student and says, listen, trust me, I mean, there's no question. I'm telling you, this guy lent this guy $100. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to somebody and says, listen, Yankel, I'm telling you, you can trust me, my name is Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, you can trust me. I'm telling you, this guy lent this guy $100. I want you to go to Bezin and testify. If the guy goes to Bezin and testifies, he's called a checker, he's lying, he's not kosher witness. You have to know, here, clear. So, because of that, you can't write it, you can't have an interpreter. So therefore, the Bezin had to know all these various languages. Okay, so you have to put your hand on his head. The entire community, meaning the witnesses, stoned them first, but because it's in the presence of the people, so therefore it's called Kol Ha'eda. And then he says like this, B'nei Yisrael to Dabar Lehmi should speak to the Yidin, saying the following. Ishish ki yikala lalakov, God forbid if somebody curses Hashem, curses his God, v'nasa chetei, he's going to bear his sin. Okay? Now, let's see the next passage, because we need to discuss these two. V'neik if shem Hashem meis yumas, and if somebody pronounces blasphemy, meaning, again, the curse, meis yumas, rogam yigmu ve'kol ha'eda. Okay? So, here it says, so Rashi says, this pasuk says he gets a sin, and then the pasuk repeats itself and says he gets stoned. Right? What does the pasuk say? Pasuk 15, Tezvav says, Ishish ki yikala lalakov v'nasa chetei. He shall be put to death, bear his sin. Then the next pasuk says, v'nekev shem Hashem, if he says the name of Hashem in a curse, so Rashi learns like this. It's very interesting. Rashi says the first pasuk is referring when he did it without witnesses. Ishish ki yikala lalakov, God forbid if a man will curse Hashem, v'nasachetei, his punishment is chorus. God will kill you.
I'm going to say, because he's not going to go tell on himself if there were no witnesses.
Right. Well, even if he did, he's not believed. No, if a guy in his room, he got angry at Hashem, okay? Nobody was around. And he cursed Hashem with the four-letter Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei word. And, you know, the din is, he gets chorus. That's, according to Rashi, that's the first pasuk. God will decide if the guy's meshuga or not. Everybody's meshuga. The question is only how much. Right? So the question is, Rashi says, Bekaris, Kshain Hasra. If there was no warning, I mean, even if witnesses saw it, by the way, but there was no warning, the punishment is Karis. Or even if there's no witnesses, Hashem knows, so Hashem will give him Karis. The second pasuk Rashi says, V'nekev Shem Hashem Maisu, Dem Logim Yirgumu Vaikola'ida. Then he gets Skila. So if the witnesses warned him, he gets stoned. If they didn't warn him, then he gets kodesh. Other mefashim learn no. Because the first pasuk, both are speaking with warning and edim. What's the difference? The first pasuk says, v'nasa chetei, he'll bear his sin, meaning Hashem will kill him. And the second pasuk says he'll get stoned. It depends how he cursed Hashem. If he cursed Hashem, like the second pasuk says, Shem Hashem, meis yumas. If he uses it with the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, then he gets stoned. If he doesn't use the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, he curses God with other names of Hashem, so then he only gets cursed. And the fundamental difference is, number one, stoning, he gets stoned right away. But there's no death row over there, where you can be 150 years before they kill you. Stoning, as we learned, the second the judges make the ruling, that day you have to be put to death.
If it's the name of a god in another language, not Hebrew.
Then it's also curse. But then the punishment was instantly, the same day. That's why Bezdin was not allowed to make a ruling at the end of the day, because it wouldn't be enough time to kill the guy, and you had to kill him the same day. No, no, I'll tell you why. Karis, you die right away. I mean, stony, you die right away. Karis, you die before you're 50 or 60.
No, but it's worse, like it's your soul is not...
No, but the difference is, it's not worse. I'll explain to you why it's better. On Karis, you could do tshuva.
Before it happens, right?
Before you die, yeah. You have time to do tshuva. Skila, well, we learned already this. When Bezdin kills you, you can't do tshuva.
But he still kills him.
Yeah.
But what happens if you do it in your 70 or 80? and it would have been
far. 110. Yeah. Hashem, you know what? One thing I learned, don't mix into God's business. Okay. God will figure out the appropriate time of having the person pass away. Whether it'll be that day, week, I mean, you know, that's up to Hashem. But the point is, Karis, you could do tshuva. Like we learned the reason. Because tshuva is in the heart. Only God knows what's really going on in your heart. The court doesn't know if you did tshuva. You could be a great actor, cry, make yourself a big tshuva man, and you're not doing tshuva. So the court can only go by what they see. That's where Nader Biyud explains this. But by Karis, a person could do tshuva. So Karis is a much easier punishment than Skila. But the crime of Skila is harder. It's a worse crime, because you did the name of Yud Kevavke or whatever. What?
How could the one be warned to say something? I mean, that person said it already. How could you be warned?
No. If he said it already, it's too late. You have to warn him. The guy says, you know that he's about to... He says, I'm... Yeah. Obviously, the guy over here was warned. Okay? So what happened was, he said, I'm going to curse God. Or they knew the intention was very clearly that he was going to do it. One second. And they come to him, and not only that, you have to tell him the crime and the punishment. And the crime and the punishment have to be said to him, Teich kedei dibur, meaning right before the crime, which is halachically the amount of time it takes to say Shalom Alecha Rebbe. Okay? That means, because they think their kids are teenagers, everybody's teenagers, if you tell him something and a minute later he commits the crime, there's a Torah assumption he forgot what you told him. It's like teenagers, they keep forgetting some of everything you tell them to do. No, but it's... That's why the whole concept of Beis Din killing you was so rare that the Mishnah says either 7 years is called, once in 7 years is called the killing Beis Din. Another opinion says once in 70 years, the law is 7 years. But in the Mishnah Sanhedrin, there's two opinions. Is it once in 7 years, once in 70 years? Because to have a case that you give Hasra by two witnesses that see each other, okay? In order for witnesses to be considered two witnesses, the halacha is also, the witnesses have to be able to see each other and see the crime. That means, if one witness is warning the guy on this side, and the other witness is warning the guy on the other side, and the witnesses don't see each other, it's not called warning of two witnesses. Okay? And not only that, Beis Din would interrogate the witnesses to such an extent, it made him crazy. Okay, so it wasn't a common thing, but the bottom line is, halacha is, as it was in this case, there was warning with the crime and the punishment. And you told them right before they did it, and the guy still went ahead and did it.
How did they know that she was going to curse God for
Hashem? Obviously, they saw what was going on.
I wonder what she was crazy.
So they ask it.
If a person is crazy, Bezin checked it out. Yes, so that's what Bezin would check out. If there would be a shaita, the din of a shaita, they wouldn't kill him.
What is the point?
What's the point of what?
Of course. curse. Like, what is the point?
What do you gain by it?
Anger.
Yes. Anger.
Why do people curse each other?
Anger.
You don't know. You don't do it, so you don't know. You should start doing it. You'll like it. It takes out a lot of tension. Okay. So then, the name is like this. The name of Shem Hashem Maisyumas, Rogim Yirgum Ovei Kol Ha'eda, the whole community kills them. And again, like you said, the agents of the court did it. Kager Ka'ezrach, whether it's a ged or a citizen of Israel, Benok V'Shem, when they mention the name of Hashem, Yumas, the guy gets killed. And again, it's stoning if he was warned. And it teaches us that both, like the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says, what's the difference, Kager Ka'ezrach? Somebody would think maybe a ger would have a different din. So it says, Kager Ka'ezrach, they're equally obligated in all the mitzvahs of the Torah, and there's no difference between them. Okay, now the Torah continues with the laws of damages and the laws of murder. What?
Does this apply to the
goys
also?
Yeah. It's one of the seven noid laws. In halacha, it's called Birchas Hashem. They don't want to say the negative. Okay, then it says like this. Ish ki yaka kol nefesh adam meisyumas. If a man will strike another person, obviously, and kill him, meisyumas, he get killed. Maki nefesh behema, and if you kill an animal, you shall manu, you have to pay nefesh tachas nefesh, a life for a life. Now, there is all these we're going to learn now about nefesh tachas nefesh, eye for eye, foot for foot, all these things. So, yes, in Torah, it says, in Parshas Mishpatim, and in here, the Torah says, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth and all that. But Chachamim learned there is no such thing in Torah. Okay? Because, in fact, the Gemara brings down two reasons for this. Reb Shimon Meyachoi says, it can't mean, I'm just saying this introduction to the Nefesh Pesukim. Reb Shimon Meyachoi says, it can't mean eye for an eye means literally eye for an eye. Because if a blind man knocks at somebody's eye, you're going to tell me he doesn't get punished because he doesn't have an eye. Or God forbid, somebody without a hand knocks off somebody's hand. You're going to tell them that nothing happens to them. That's one. And there's another thing. The Torah says like this. The Yeshiva of Chizkiya, the Gemara brings down in Bava Kamma, that Yeshiva of Chizkiya says, the Torah says eye for an eye. If eye for an eye would mean literal, sometimes when you knock out somebody's eye, he could die. That means you're giving him a punishment worse than the crime he committed. So the Gemara says these are two logical proofs that teach us you can't have such a punishment. Eye for an eye. Or hand for an hand. Fundamental reason is because that's what Torah Shebaal Peh says the Torah means. Okay? That's what Torah Shebaal Peh explains. This is what Halacha says. Okay. Now it says like this: nefesh tachas nefesh, restitution, a life for a life. Meaning, what does it mean, life for a life? You kill an animal, you have to pay the market value of the animal. You pay the market value of the animal, or of the object that you destroyed. Somebody just brought to my attention a very interesting halacha question with this. Somebody said it was a true story. A guy bought something, and this is a very interesting question, comes up a lot. I don't have an answer now, so I'm not going to, just to bring up the point of the question. The case was, a guy bought a suit for $50, a jacket for $50. He gave it to the cleaners, and the cleaner said to him, you know that this jacket is worth $300. It's worth $300. Yeah. And then the cleaners ruined the jacket. Okay? So now they have to pay for the jacket. Right? That's the law. Do they pay 50 or do they pay 300?
The market.
Understand? The guy paid $50. So did they damage him $50? Or they damaged him the jacket? And the jacket is worth $300. Or you have another thing. You have a phone. Yeah? You bought the phone new, $100. Yeah? Replacement value, if you want to go buy the phone now again, it's another $100. It's also $100. Right? Let's say, right? A year after you have the cell phone, I break your phone. Now, to replace the phone is $100, right? But you paid $100 and you used it for a year. So your phone's not worth $100. But to replace it is going to cost you $100. What do you pay? Do you pay the replacement value? Or do you pay, figure out, let's say a cell phone, let's say for argument's sake, last 10 years, yeah? So it's $10 a year. So do you pay $90 or do you pay $100? But this is all part of these halachas. Maybe next time we'll go get more into. I said, am I giving you an answer now? Okay, so it says, nefesh tachas nefesh, what does it mean? You have to pay the market value of the animal. No, but you have, this is very common, but this child is very common, not about the suit with the cleaners, $50. You buy something, somebody breaks it, now you need to buy a new one. But lapel, the thing was old. You know.
I mean, it's the difference between the different things increase in value the longer you have it. It goes from being used to being antique.
Yeah, but the question is, what do I have to pay you? Now you need a new phone.
So it's complicated. The market.
A guy that lives in L.A. happened to be in Israel this week. He calls me with the following question. He was flying from England to Eretz Yisrael. He lives here in L.A., not in L.A., but in Southern California. He went to England for Pesach, then he flew to Eretz Yisrael. And he bought traveler's insurance, in case they lose your stuff. But his suitcase ended up in Paris. And he was in Israel. So he went to the airline, he had insurance, right? So he said, okay, whatever you need, buy. You know, up to $500, you're insured, okay? That they will replace it. So he told him, whatever you need, okay. But he arrived in Israel Friday, and the suitcase wasn't coming to Sunday. Now, this guy wears a kapot on Shabbos. Now, he didn't have a kapot because his kapot is in Paris. Now, so he goes to somebody and says, he wasn't interested in ripping off the airline. He wanted somebody, he said, maybe you have a kapot that I can borrow for Shabbos. You know? Anyway, the guy says, go to the store and buy a kapot. Get a kapot. Later he found out there was a partner in the store. Anyway, he said, go to the store and buy a kapot. So the guy went to the store and he realized to himself, you know, this kapot is not so new anyway. You know, I wasn't going to buy one, but now I'll go buy a new kapot. So, and he realized that in dollars, it would be like $195. And a new kapot here is over $200. So he said, okay, you know, it's even cheaper there. So, what was the shaila to me? Can he charge the airline for that kapot? Because really, they told him whatever you need. He needs to wear a kapot on Shabbos. That's what he does, right? So the shaila is, can he take that from the, because it's still less than $500. Is he allowed to charge the airline for the kapot? No.
Why not?
Yes.
Why not? He needed it. They told him to go buy what he needs. It's under the $500. He's going to have now, so the same thing, if he buys underwear, pajamas, or whatever he's going to buy, he's also going to keep it. He's not throwing it out when he gets his old. He's also going to keep it. But that's what he needs now, and that's the insurance, that they pay up to $500. So why shouldn't he be able to get it? I told him he can do it. So he felt guilty. I said, why are you guilty? The Jewish guilt, you know. why are you feeling guilty? You're allowed to do it. That's what the insurance is. He paid for the insurance. No, he didn't pay $500 insurance.
He paid a premium.
Right, to be able to get this. He didn't make a mistake. No, he asked the Shaila. So. And he was arguing with me. I said, I'm not telling you have to buy it. I'm saying you can buy it. Anyway, If a man inflicts a wound on his fellow, kasher also, like you did, can you also, like so you should do to him. So simply the pasuk means, you hurt somebody's hand, you get hurt in the hand. And it says, shevet tachas shevet, a break for a break, which just learning it simply means, you break somebody's foot, they break your foot. That's what the pasuk means. Look at the pasuk. Take chumash literally, like the Korites did. Kasher, also what you did, can you also, like, this is what's to be done to you. Break for a break, eye for an eye, shein tacha shein, tooth for a tooth. Kasher yitin mum ba'adam, just like you afflicted a wound on a person, can you not simbe, so should be done to you. So again, if you look in the Chumash, clearly, simply, no lumdas, no scholarly things, the Torah says clearly, you knock out somebody's eye, you get your eye knocked out. You break somebody's foot, you get your foot broken. Okay? Like in the Arab countries, if you steal, they chop off your hand. Okay, yet, Torah Shebaal Peh teaches us there is no such thing in Torah. It means eye for an eye. What does eye for an eye mean? How much a person would be sold on the market? With an eye or without an eye? But even then, for instance, it says how much the victim would be sold for. For instance, they bring the mashal from Rashi and the Medrash. If a guy, let's say, was a singer, okay, and you, God forbid, cut off his hand, you didn't affect him as much as a carpenter who you cut off his hand, right? If you beat somebody up and you cut off his hand, it's a big difference if the guy's a singer or he's a carpenter. A singer is not going to become affected value-wise much less, because if he's being sold as a singer, what's the difference if he has hands or not? He can still sing. Maybe not be able to go like this, but he can still sing. It's like they say, you know how you keep a Jew quiet? Put their hands, tie their hands behind their back. They can't talk, because Jews always talk with their hands. You tie their hands behind the back, they can't talk.
What? The letters under the letters I, it will be kesir.
Right. That's the Balaturim says, yeah, Mefarshim say, but that's not, I'm bringing over here that the Torah Shebaal Peh says that's not what it means. How much a person would be sold as a slave with a broken foot and without a broken foot? The difference, that is the amount that you damage the person. Bezdin determines exactly what the price is. Because again, it depends what type of person you're talking about. What?
It just seems sort of strange that this is not like a bad meter. You know, somebody breaks your arm, so you break their arm. That's a cruel meter. And here the Torah is like spelling it out, and we know from our sages that it's not that way. But why would the Torah write it like that?
Why is the Torah writing ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein? Sometimes the Torah writes things for people to be able to make a mistake and to misinterpret.
The teacher.
It's the beginning of Chumash. Before Sheini. The beginning of Chumash, sixth day of creation. V'yemer lakim na'ase odam b'tzalmeinu kidmaseinu. Let us make man. You are saying, let us make man. You know what you're saying, God? People are going to think there's me and God and somebody else. How can you say that? So what did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? You write it. Whoever wants to make a mistake, let them. The Torah allows mistakes. Why does the Torah allow mistakes? The Torah wants to see if people believe in the oral tradition or doesn't believe in the oral tradition. The Torah writes, Torah writes by tefillin, put it between your eyes, right? We don't put it between the eyes, correct? We put it on the head, in between the eyes, right? Not here, but in between the eyes. Why couldn't the Torah just write it the right way, first time? That's the way Hashem wants. Hashem wants to give people the opportunity to make a mistake if they want. Okay, then it says like this. Umaki behema yishamena. If somebody kills an animal, they have to pay. But maki adam, but if you kill a person, you must, and he gets killed. In other words, contrary to many people think that animals are more important than people, the Torah says if you kill an animal, you don't kill your animal, you just pay for the animal. But God forbid, if somebody kills somebody, so then you must, then the person has to die. But again, that again is when they were warned with you know, right. Now, L'cha'eda, the Rashi says from here, we learn an interesting din. Rashi says, Maki Adam Yumas. Because it says, Maki Behemi Shalmena. Right? If you hit it. Maki Adam Yumas. Now, where do you have a case that you don't kill a person, you hit them, and they die? And you get killed, I mean. Normally, if you just beat up a person, you have to pay damages. So Rashi says, from the Gemara, Afilu lo yaroga asa b'chubura. Because it doesn't say Maki Nefesh Adam. Before the Pasuk said, and the Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ish ki yake kol Nefesh Adam meis yumas. So over there it says when you kill the soul of a person means you actually kill him. Here the Torah changes the term and says Maki Adam yumas. If you hit a person, you die. L'chei, that means you don't kill him. So why should you die if you hit a person? So Rashi says it refers to a father and a mother. You hit your father and a mother and you cause a wound. So that's what this pasuk is talking about here. Because all the other dinim, the Torah already said. So why, Rashi continues, why does it do it in the same pasuk? Maka behema yishalmeno, maka adam yumas. One is paying, one is death. Right? Why does the Torah say it in the same pasuk? To teach us like this. Just like when you hit an animal. The animal is alive. If you hit a dead animal, you don't have to pay. It's dead. Right? So the same thing, Maki Adam Yumas teaches us like this. It's speaking about hitting a parent and you cause them to bleed. Right? But it's speaking only when they're alive. Just like Maki Behemi Shalmena means when you hit an animal which is alive, the Torah in the same pasuk says, Umaki Adam Yumas, to teach us, Rashi says, Ma maka beime mechayim, af maka avavime mechayim. But, le maka achemisi yapater. But, why does the Torah need to say it? Rashi says an interesting thing. Because the pasuk that says, when you curse your father and mother, mais yumas, is even after they die. If somebody curses the parents after they pass away, you still get killed. But if you hit the parents, the Torah says in Zegzeres HaKosuv, obviously cursing is worse than hitting. If you hit them after they die, then you don't get death penalty. Yeah, in Parsha Mishpatim. The Torah is repeating all these dinim from Mishpatim. So the Torah is saying that you can, in the Chiyuv, one second, the chiyuv of death for killing a of hitting a parent is only, Rashi says also over here again, even though it's brought down in Mishpatim, it's only when you make them bleed. If they don't bleed, then you're not obligated. And therefore there's a very interesting halachic aspect with this, about a doctor treating his parents. Is a doctor allowed to do, besides the fact that doctors as a rule don't like to do it, for moral purposes, they can't act as a doctor to be emotionally involved. But there's a halachic issue of a child performing surgery on parents, or taking out, even as brought down in halacha, taking out a splinter. Because if you cause him chabura with blood, if by taking it out you cause him to bleed, that's a chabura that's makav avimei mesumas. But poskim write that what happens if the parent wants? The parent wants the child to do the surgery, or they want the child to take out the splinter, so then you're allowed to do it, and you don't get punished for causing blood. Because they want it, they ask you to do it. But some, if somebody does it in a way that they cause the parents to bleed, they're not allowed. It's chayv nisim.
It doesn't understand how you can hit somebody's dead. Why do you
know, I understand something. You come from Russia? You know what the communists used to do after they used to kill Jews? What did the Nazis do after they killed Jews? They kept hitting them.
No, but we are talking parent and child.
Why should a kid hit the parent? Why should a kid hit a parent when they're alive?
Also, but especially...
We have to get it more Americanized. Get it into the system. What?
Why Torah repeats itself over here?
From Mishpatim?
Yes.
Rashi doesn't... One second. There are certain things, Mashu, I'll give you an example. Before the Pasuk says, and Pasuk 17, it says, Ish ki yake kol nefesh adam meis yumas. Right? In 17 it says, a man who strikes any human life should be put to death. Right? So Rashi asks, already it says that mishpatim, maki ish va meis yumas. So already, if you hit a man and he dies, he can get... So Rashi says, from there I would only know if you kill an adult. A male ish. Ish is a man, adult. How do I know if you kill a woman or a kid, you also get killed? That's this pasuk. In other words, so many times the Torah will say the same thing in two different places, but the Torah will add what's called the misadavish and the schadish bay because of the new din that wasn't in the earlier parsha. Like that parsha said, if you hit an ish and you kill him, you die. But ish by definition means an adult male. How do I know you kill a woman, God forbid, or a kid, God forbid? It's the same din. So the Torah says it here. Why the Torah couldn't have said this one pasuk there would mean anybody? That's the way the Torah goes. I don't know. That's the way Hashem works with the things that he repeats and so on and so forth.
But is this connected to the previous parasha?
Oh, why is it Hashem saying it here? Because now that there is a din of Mekalel, okay, and there's Mekalel by parents and there's damage by parents, so the Torah puts them all together. In fact, this is all said because of this case. Because we'll soon see, soon the Pasuk is going to say that Meshach Rabbeinu did it. Okay, Pasuk of Beis. Mishpat Echad Yielochem, there'll be one law for you. Kager Ko Ezer Chi, again, whether the person's a convert or a stranger or a citizen. Why? Ki Ani Hashem Alekechem, because I am God, you God. So in other words, because I am Hashem, Hashem, you're Hashem, these are the laws. This is what I'm telling you to do. So, Vayidav and Meshach B'nai Yisrael, Meshach Rabbeinu spoke all these laws to the B'nai Yisrael, Vayitzius and Mekalel al Michutz Lamachana, they took out the one that cursed, meaning this guy, outside the camp, Vayigumu Eisei Oven, they stoned him with a stone, Uvnei Yisrael also Kashatziv Hashem as Meshach, and the Yidin did what Hashem commanded the Jews to do, and which basically is killing the Mekalel. Now, he was the same time as the Mekesha Sheitzim. But we'll learn later, the Mekesha Sheitzim, the wood chopper, was a holy guy. According to one opinion, it was Tzlovchad, the one that had the five girls. But Tzlovchad, we'll see when we learn that then, later on in Chumash, much later in Chumash, that there are opinions in the Medrash that says that the Mekalutak was a bad guy. The guy that chopped wood on Shabbos, that they also stoned him, is he wanted to show the Jews that God meant business. Then he had Mesidus Nefesh. Because the people thought, okay, it's not going to happen. You know, he went ahead and was Mechal Shabbos in order to show that he was going to get stoned. Is it a wise thing to do? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't advise people to do it if they ask me their advice. But, in fact, the Paschim even ask a question. If that was why he did it, he shouldn't have been Chayiv Misa. Because we learned Melacha Sheni Tzricha L'Gufa, we learned in the Gemara, a work that you don't do for the initial purpose of the work, you do it for a different reason, so the Allah is that you don't get killed. I mean, Rabbi Yudah holds you get killed, and Rav Shimon says you don't get killed. Everybody except the Rambam Paschim is like Rav Shimon, that you don't get killed. So the question is, if he did it, to be able to prove a point that Hashem is going to kill the Jews. So he didn't do it because he needed the wood. Normally, why do you chop wood? Because you need the wood. Here, he didn't chop the wood because he needed the wood. He did it to prove a point that he's going to get killed. So according to Allah, he shouldn't have gotten killed. And there's a whole...
Maybe he didn't tell them, though. He didn't tell Basti.
Yeah, but if he wasn't... If he shouldn't have gotten killed, Hashem wouldn't have allowed him to be killed. Hashem doesn't allow...
But maybe it's a good point, because they didn't get to know his thoughts why he did it.
I understand. I understand. But why did Hashem allow him to be killed? That's the question. Yeah, you're right. From Bezdin's perspective, they didn't know what his intentions were. Right? He just said, I'm going to do it, and he did it. The question is, if he was talking not obligated to get killed by Bezdin, so why did Hashem make that he should get killed? And that's... So obvious, but that's a separate issue. Okay, that's it with this parsha. Okay, Mitzvah next week. Start the next parsha.